Hello, everyone, and welcome back to our second midweek miracle episode. It just so happens that my life has a little more spaciousness right now, and so I have the time to be putting out these midweek episodes. I'm also interviewing so many people, and I thought, my goodness, if I don't start releasing episodes during the week, I'm going to have a serious backlog, which is good news for all of you out there who are listening. That means that you're going to be hearing so many more stories of magic, so many more stories of miracles. Hopefully, all these stories will put a little hitch in your giddy up as you make your ways in the world during the week. My guest this week is an ordained minister, Roger Butts. He's been a Unitarian Universalist minister for about 20 years. As Roger describes himself, he's a follower of the way of radical peacemaking. He really believes that Jesus was an activist. And in listening to our conversation, I think you'll understand that Roger is an activist as well. He's deep into centering prayer in the contemplative life, and he, like me, believes that humor and grace are going to be what saves us. Roger's also a chaplain, and the story that he shares this week is a powerful one. And with this story, on the surface, it appears that it's a simple one. But when you truly comprehend the story that Roger is telling, you'll understand just how powerful it is. So now, this next episode of Bite-Sized Blessings.
And I got a call. Nobody wants to see the chaplain at 7 p.m. on a Friday night, generally speaking. But I got a call from a nurse, and he said, Roger, there's a frail little woman up here, and she's tiny, and she's going to go to hospice in a couple of days, but her family has left for the night to get some rest. And she's in there, and I think she could use some company and maybe a prayer, whatever. And I was like, of course, I'll come right up. Thank you so much. Thank you for having me. And I identify as Roger Butts. I identify as a person who grew up in the Midwest, where I am right now, visiting my aging mother. I am a husband to a clergy person. She is in the United Church of Christ and super committed to inner spiritual, inner faith work. And I am a father. I have three young adult children. I'm very proud of them. And I've got a 11-month-old black lab that I'm sure one day I will be proud of, but she's coming along. And I play tennis and I pray and I sit with Buddhists. And I call myself a follower of the way of Jesus, that radical rabbi who wanted to make new things out of the world. I am someone who really reads a lot of Carl Sandburg and Thomas Merton. I really try to quiet down when I pray and meditate. So I practice centering prayer. I have identified as an activist. I worked for a year to end the death penalty in Colorado, and I've worked on GLBTQ equality issues. So, yeah, those are some of the ways I identify. Mostly, I would say the thing that's probably going to be on my, gravestone, if you still had those, would be like, he was a bit of a dork, but he was, I guess, okay.
I like the I guess okay part. That's actually funny. I guess okay. So this activist piece of you, was this something that was modeled for you as a kid, or how did that come about? How did that surface for you?
What a great question. The activist part of me was activated, I would say, in some ways modeled for me as a kid. I grew up in a town that was very civic minded, and I grew up in a town that was very pitch in and help out. It's come on hard times since, and I think there needs to be a return to that spirit in this town. But I always was pretty sensitive when I thought something was unfair or unjust. I'd get pretty sensitive. And so what I had to learn when I first got into ministry, I wanted to chase after all of those issues. You know, I wanted to be involved in this. And I began to see that it was not sustainable. It wasn't helping. It wasn't healthy. And I had to practice what in centering prayer we call kenosis, or self-emptying, so that I didn't charge in at every turn. I really believe that the test of any faith is in its social effect. Does it make you more compassionate? Does it make you more connected? Does it make you more human? Does it make you love somebody even if you don't want them, or at least invite you to, like, you know, love them? You don't have to like them, but does it discourage you from hating the other, right? And so I want to live in the house of love, you know. I want to live in the house of connection, and not in the house of fear or anxiety or hatred, exclusion. So I had some political skills. I studied that, and I knew how politics worked. And so I was able to be in a ministry that really combined my interest in human dignity and faith.
I love that. I totally resonate with your explanation of wanting to rush in and take a big gulp of all sorts of different social issues.
Right.
And at one point I had to step back and say, hey, Kirsten, honestly, like, that's why there are billions of humans on this planet. Other people can do good works too. You can form bands together. You can come together, but please don't take it all on yourself, because you'll burn out or explode, or who knows.
And what could happen. Yeah. And what you've identified is so important. This is a way to find your people.
Yeah.
So the rabbi and I, in my first ministry in Davenport, Iowa, the rabbi and I, and the Congregationalist minister and I, and the Lutheran minister and I, and a Baptist minister and I, we all formed together to help. And a Catholic woman organized us to get organized. But it was really important to build those friendships, because there's joy in this work and connection in this work, as well as the struggle.
And hopefully good potluck as well.
Those Lutherans, they know how to do potlucks.
Well, I'm so curious. Did you grow up in a religious household, or
how totally. Did that?
Totally. Okay.
Yeah. And it was different than I've landed as a Unitarian Universalist minister. And I've been ordained for 22 years or something. But I grew up in a Baptist household, and it was traditional. It wasn't hateful, I don't think. It had its blind spots, and I had to get out of it. You know, I had to deconstruct that and reemerge in a different world. But my parents weren't like, those people are bad, and those people are bad, and those people, that wasn't the vibe. So I, you know, if the church doors were open, we were there. And sometimes when the church doors weren't open, we were there. And so it was important. I also have uncles who are Baptist ministers, and they, you know, educators and ministers, and they were important to me as well. One I have very different view of the world from, but you know, when he writes a book, he'll transcribe it to my wife and me, and he'll say, above all love, above all love. And that warms my heart because we disagree on a number of things, but at the center of it all is love.
And I think that's so interesting, just based on, you know, not just right now, but everything that's happened under the sun for as long as Homo sapiens has been around. It's so simple. It is so simple, but being out in the world and enacting it or embodying it seems to be so challenging for so many. And I don't know how it's become so complicated. I mean, the lists are long, right? The reasons are huge, vast. But if we can all just like step back from whatever's going on or however events or people are defined and just understand this one precept, I think our lives could be way more beautiful, way more simple, and lighter even, you know, because we won't be carrying all that baggage around of why we shouldn't like someone or why we should accept someone.
Exactly. What's in our business if somebody else is doing this or that, that like somebody says is wrong? No, that's, you know, unless somebody is really being harmed, we should have a more libertarian view of some of these things, let people be. But theologically, so to speak theologically for a moment, you know, which is sounds god awful, and I apologize in advance. But the to speak poetically for a moment, what has helped me is that there was this philosopher in France, and he was Jewish, and most of his family died in the Holocaust, and he became a philosopher and tried to understand all of this. And what he says is the only thing that can convert us to a life of ethics and peace and justice and goodness, the only thing that can convert us is the face of the other. So when I encounter the face of the other, and I write about this in my book, but when I encounter the face of the other, then I, if I can imagine that I'm beholding the face of the divine, the face of the sacred, then I'll know deep in my bones before I can ever categorize them, label them, anything, that I should do no harm.
That's really gorgeous. You know, I have reflected in the past, you know, just seeing the division and the reasons certain groups don't like each other or approve of each other. I just think, much like you, like, is this really any of my business? Like who they partner with or who they choose to affiliate with or who they work for? Like, is it literally any of my business? And the answer always is for me, no, because I want my chi and my energy to go towards building things and creating positivity and creating opportunities or lifting other people up. That's where I want my energy to go. I don't want it to go to exclusion or making people feel bad or judging. Now, I'm not perfect at all, and I slip up all the time. I get really sloppy with some things, but I am so conscious. I'm like, where is my chi going? Where is my energy going? And is it a beautiful place? And so I think that's been super helpful for me.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. And oh my goodness, I lose perspective. I lose my way all the time. Sometimes when I introduce myself, I say, I believe that grace and humor will save us all. a little bit of grace and a little bit of humor will save us all. Right now, we're so divided, and always, like, it's a cliche, but it's so true. Like, follow the money. There are people getting very wealthy, very, very wealthy, trying to divide us. I'm married to the daughter of an immigrant, right? And so when somebody speaks about immigrants in a hateful way, I take that personally. It hurts me personally. But even if I wasn't married to the daughter of an immigrant, I should take it personally and make it hurt my heart, because I want my heart to be open to the basic humanity of another person. When I left Davenport, Iowa, as the minister at the Unitarian Church there, it was 15 years ago or something. When I left there, the Muslim community wrote an editorial in the paper thanking me for my ministry. When Muslims are attacked, when immigrants are attacked, this should hurt my heart because there are siblings as much as anybody. And we somehow along the way, Jewish people, Muslim people, anybody who's being attacked in this way, it's an attack on all of us. We're all deeply connected at some level with one another, and it's an attack on all of us.
Absolutely. I was, you know, that's why I'm so, so very, very, very grateful that I grew up overseas as a kid, because nice. Honestly, that exposure to kind of every kid, every kind of parent from all over the world just has irrevocably changed me. And
you know,
when you're like a kid and you're, who cares what your religion is, who cares what your skin color is, you're just in it for the soccer game. It changes you forever. Plus, you know, I got dragged to so many different countries, like every, you know, up until I was a freshman in college. And I didn't understand at the time that this was like maybe the biggest gift that my parents could give me. But now looking back, I mean, it was the biggest gift that they can give me, because I've talked to friends, people like, and they've said, oh, these people are so terrible. They deserve everything they're getting, or these. And I'm like, have you ever met anyone? Have you ever like gone to their country? Have you ever? I mean, and it's always no. It's always no experience of that culture, that group of people, an individual, nothing. They it's not that they want to hate, but it's easy to just lazily fall into, I don't know, disliking someone for whatever. And it's so frustrating to me. It makes my heart hurt.
Your heart is very open and tender, and I can tell it makes your heart hurt. I believe a new day is dawning. I just believe it. You know, the evidence isn't there necessarily, but I believe it. We've made so much progress from when I'm a lot older than you are, and we've made so much progress on the GLBTQIA front, right? We've made so much progress on so many things. But when we're in it, it's sometimes hard to see. I went with my beloved Marta to a musical one time in Colorado Springs. It wasn't your typical musical, but it was three people describing the new to America experience, the new to the U.S. experience. And one of them was a guy who lives in North Carolina, but was from Chicago. I can't remember. Might be in Chicago, suburban Chicago or something, who came from Mexico. And he started this Songs from the Border project. And at the beginning, when he toured it, he noticed all these people, you know, would leave. At intermission, they would leave and not come back. And they were white folks typically. And he said they would leave. And he thought to himself, however impassioned I am, my message is not getting through because my message is hitting too hard and people are leaving. So what he did was he built his experience as a child coming to the U.S. His mother stayed back to raise his little brother. So he was away from his mom for a long time. And he said, I've got to rethink this so that the negativity isn't coming through, but the experience of being loved and human and connected is coming through. And so he took his experience and wrapped it into the Wizard of Oz story. All right. We're not in Kansas anymore. Right. And that's how he began to tell his story in a way that invited people in as opposed to push them away. In a time of great divisiveness, against every instinct we have, we must continue to open our hearts and try to appeal to our common humanity.
Have you ever experienced or witnessed? I'd love for you to relate to me a story or stories where you feel like you've experienced or witnessed something that was magical or miraculous in your life?
Oh my goodness. Well, we could be here the rest of the day. But it's like 50 degrees in Illinois where I am right now. So I can't be here the rest of the day. I got to get out. What a beautiful question. First of all, what a beautiful question to ground ourselves in awe and wonder and miracle is such a gift. That's number one. For the most part, I'm a hospital chaplain. I've done some parish ministry, but I'm really better at hospice chaplaincy and hospital chaplaincy. And I've been a hospital chaplain for quite a while. So I'm going to tell you a story, and I hope you enjoy it. So it was a Friday night. I was working in Colorado Springs, where I lived for 14, 15 years, until recently when I moved to Fort Collins. I was working Friday evening at 7 p.m. as a hospital chaplain in a Catholic hospital where I worked full time and had for years. And I got a call. Nobody wants to see the chaplain at 7 p.m. on a Friday night, generally speaking. But I got a call from a nurse, and he said, "Roger, there's a frail little woman up here, and she's tiny, and she's going to go to hospice in a couple of days. But her family has left for the night to get some rest. And she's in there, and I think she could use some company and maybe a prayer, whatever." And I was like, "Of course, I'll come right up." So I went up to fourth floor. And as I was going in, the nurse said to me, "Roger, I just want you to know that she's a little confused, and she's in there muttering the Lord's Prayer. You know, remember that one? 'Our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name, thy kingdom come.'" And sure enough, I walked in and she was pretty much asleep, you know, kind of out of it. But she's, "Thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread." And so I just sit next to her, quiet as can be. I sit next to her and I hold her hand. I just hold that small little hand. I'm like, "Well, I know this prayer. I might as well join in as quietly as I can. Give us this day our daily bread. Forgive us our trespasses." And I'm going along with it. And as we're going along, it was sort of slow. It's kind of unfolding slowly. But somehow, the sweet little old lady that I met for 20 minutes on the fourth floor of a hospital in Colorado Springs, somehow she woke up enough to notice my presence. And we're getting towards the end. And she says, "Oh, goodness, I seem to have forgotten the end. But thank you, God, for everything."
Oh my goodness. I do have to tell you that I admire hospital chaplains so much. I had an option when I went to seminary for an internship and to do some CPE. Yes. And I ran screaming from that opportunity because I just wasn't ready for it. And right. So first, I just want to say thank you so much for your work and for being able to be present to people on what could potentially be one of the worst days of their life. Thank you for having the capacity to be there for people, whether it's just to listen or it's to have a conversation or hold their hand. I do have to say that every chaplain I've had on the show has pretty much told the most beautiful stories I've ever heard.
Isn't that beautiful? I mean, in the she had probably said the Our Father, the Lord's Prayer 3,000 times in her life. You know, she probably grew up in Catholic school. She probably said it every Sunday or Saturday night, you know. And then at the end of her life, she was able to use that practice to go to the deepest silences of her soul and find there what? Love and gratitude. I mean, that is the whole thing. If that's not a miracle, I don't know what is, right? If that's not a momentous moment, that shifts everything. I don't know what is. So I really believe that miracles are all around us. But that was for me a very special moment where she gave me a new ending to a prayer that I love. She gave me a remembrance of love and gratitude. But thank you, God, for everything. In the midst of her vulnerability and her weakness, her fatigue, there was gratitude.
Everyone, thanks so much for listening to the podcast. I've actually had conversations with two different people this week, and they've told me that they're just going out and telling people about the podcast. And I thought to myself, oh my gosh, thank you so much. It is so hard getting the word out there. I can talk to so many people, try to do things on social media, but it doesn't even work as well unless other people are telling their friends, those that they hold dear, hey, you got to listen to this podcast. It's really wonderful. So for those of you who are out there sharing the pod with the world, I'm so very grateful. And of course, always thank you for the ratings and the reviews that you've left. They help so very much and they make my heart so very happy. I need to thank Roger for being such a gracious and wonderful guest this week. I'm going to have a link to a blog that Roger was writing. He stopped writing it in about 2022, but there are some beautiful, beautiful submissions on that website. And I'm also going to have a link to the book that Roger wrote, Seeds of Devotion, How to Make Sense of Everyday Life with Mindfulness and Good Questions. On the treasures page of the website and in the episode show notes, you'll find a link to the book. I'm always encouraging my listeners to go out and investigate other ways of being in the world. I've recently started meditation, and you know, in my perfect world, I'd love to be contemplative, but I just don't have space for it right now. I just so appreciate Roger for the work that he's doing in this world and for how he's trying to make this world a better place for those who are around him. I need to thank the creators of the music used in this episode this week, Sasha End. For complete attribution, please see the episode show notes. Thank you for listening, and here's my one request. Be like Roger. Be present for other people in their deepest moments, in their deepest silences, in their deepest mysteries. With all that's going on in the world today, sometimes it is very hard to take care of ourselves and then also be present for other people. But you never know when that moment of magical connection is going to appear to you. And I think that if we can all be present to at least one person every week, someone who needs to express their sorrow or tell you a story, or just they need someone to just sit with them and maybe just be present. Look for those opportunities. Look for ways you can serve other people or just be present to them. And like Roger, be open to the mystery that's life and understand that the potentials for grace, they're all around us, all the time.